wanna take the breath that's true. I look to you and I see nothing. I look to you to see the truth. You live your life, you grow in shadow. You'll come apart and you'll go blind. Some kind of night into your darkness. Close your eyes with what's not there.
Show here at the Critical Review. This is Etta Volk. I'll be your hostess for the next hour, and I have a very special guest tonight, William Fink from Christogena. But before we introduce him, please go to republicbroadcastingnetwork.org and donate, because your generous donations help to keep this platform up and running so that we can give you the free speech, news, facts, and what's really going on in the world. You can go to the website. You could call 800-724-2719 to donate, or make a check or money order out to RBN and send it to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And then after the half-hour mark, we'll take calls. 512-248-8252. Please check out thenewway.net. That is a pro-white website, and so we have to support our brothers. And this show is also simulcasted on RDT Magazine, ARDITI Magazine on Substack. And you can also find it on 88 Streams, which is another pro-white video streaming site, but you could also upload your own videos if you like, or just watch other people. And it's also sent over to Rumble. So without further ado, welcome, William, or should I call you Bill? Which do you prefer?
Well, thank you. My wife prefers William, but I settled for Bill. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Just don't come stay for dinner.
Right, Mary? There's two most important things to men. I won't mention one, and the other is food, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Right. So you've been on RBN before with our Deanna Spingola. Unfortunately, she had passed, I think, a few years ago.
Yes. Deanna's missed, I'm sure.
Yes, very much so. How long has it been since you've been on RBN?
2011, I think. That's the most recent I could find. I did maybe three podcasts with Deanna.
Wow.
And one of them, two of them were planned. She wanted me to talk about Adolf Hitler and Christianity, which is one of my side projects. But the third one was a last minute fill-in on Stattmiller's show, because he couldn't make it that day. So I don't even remember really what we spoke about, but we did. So I could go dig it out of Christogena's archives. Stattmiller, he passed too. I'm sad to hear.
Yes. I think a couple years ago. It was unexpected, from what I understand. It was before my time here on RBN, but, you know, God bless them both. And, you know, they're back with the Lord, and we all return to God. So, you know, I remind myself of that every day, and not to, you know, not to get too worked up about what's going on in the world. And, you know, so tell us where everybody can find you. You got your site, Christa. Now, how do you, I'm sorry, mispronounce it. Christogena?
Christogena.
Okay.
The G in Greek and Roman Latin was always hard. This soft G thing is a a Norman Frankish thing, I think.
Okay.
It was always a hard G in German, Greek, and Roman.
Okay, so Crystallgenia, right?
Well, Crystallgenia.
Genia, okay, all right, I got it. Got it.
It's by itself, the word genea means race.
Okay.
And in the King James Bible, it's translated as generation, which is correct in 1611.
Right.
The way to use the term generation then. A generation is something that two individuals, when we're talking about people, that two individuals generate.
Right.
That's a generation.
Right.
So it's basically, if they perpetuate their same nation or their same kind or kindred, that's a race. That's what we consider a race.
Right.
So genea means race, primarily.
Okay.
Even when it means, in a temporal sense, all of the people living at one time, it does not lose its connotation of race. And that's a big gaslight in interpreting the Bible. And the churches deny any connection to race in the word, but it's all throughout Greek literature, so it can't be denied. It's the churches are all demonstrably corrupted with egalitarianism and universalism, which is an age-old problem in the church.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's really just rife with corruption. It, at a minimum, at least as bad as Weimar, perhaps even worse, I would think.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you wanted me to speak about my primary or basic view of the Bible. The Bible is a book about race.
Mm-hmm.
In Genesis chapter 5, in Adam was one man and his wife were told to go forth and propagate. And in Genesis chapter 5, that begins to happen. And Genesis chapter 5 opens with the words, "This is the book of the generations of Adam." But that word generations is the Hebrew word toledah. And
okay.
Toledah means genealogy or descendants.
Right.
That's the way Strong's defines the word. Descendants, proceedings, meaning what proceeds from you, genealogies, it's that's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
So our word genealogy comes from that Greek word genea, which means race.
Right.
And genea has three possible meanings, and one of them is anointed race, and another one is race of Christ. And the third one is birth of Christ, because genea can mean birth in certain contexts. I coined the term a couple of years before I began the website in 2009. This is the book of the race of Adam or the genealogies of Adam. And in Genesis chapter 6, we see that these giants is a poor translation of a word, which is Nephilim. Nephilim is from a verb meaning Nephal. A verb nephal meaning to fall. Nephilim properly means fallen ones. And I have documentation from Hebrew lexicons that was the original way in the medieval period that the word Nephilim was interpreted. But all of a sudden, with the rise of humanism and humanistic ideals, it became giants. And the original meaning was forgotten. Or they want to deny the original meaning. So those Nephilim, the fallen ones, are explained in Revelation chapter 12, the angels that rebelled against God and were cast down to earth. And that's metaphorical language, and you could think of it what you will, but they were cast down to earth, and they were outcast ever since and considered accursed, and their place was found no more in heaven. So they are the fallen ones, who mingled with the descendants of Adam and caused the flood. It was a race-mixing event.
Right.
When we get to Genesis chapter 10 and the other side of the flood and Noah's descendants, this table of nations in Genesis chapter 10, they can't, because this table of nations was basically how Moses, having written, had represented the world before him, perhaps 800 years before him, 900 years before him, he represented the world of Noah's descendants. They can't all be identified any longer with actual nations or tribes of people because they've disappeared from the historical record, or there's no memorial of them in archaeology. But enough of the Genesis 10 nations from each of Shem, Ham, and Japheth can be clearly identified through archaeology and ancient history, and it can be fully determined that they were all white, every one of them. They were all Caucasian, what we would call Caucasian. They were all white. So all of these nations were white. I could do a quick rundown. Madai is the Medes. Herodotus in 450 BC said the Medes were the first people called Aryans. And that's in 450 BC. And he's writing of this Madai, these people called Medes, wherever you see Medes later in scripture, the underlying Hebrew term is Madai. And Javan, they are the Ionian Greeks. And they were certainly white. We have plenty of artwork of them. And Javan is the same. It's really Yavan in Hebrew. And it's the same word that the Persians used to describe those Greeks. The Ionian Greeks, they call them Yavana. So that's an indubitable, unmistakable association of these two tribes of Japheth with historical peoples. And I could make the same associations of the children of Cush, of the sons of Ham, right? The Philistines of the sons of Ham, Mitzrayim is Egypt. Cush is the tribe of Cush is the founders of the Akkadian Empire in Mesopotamia, which scholars until recently considered the cradle of civilization. And it should still be considered like that, because that's where we all ultimately came from. All white people ultimately came from Mesopotamia. And 3200 BC and these nations that descended from Noah. All white people today. Truly white people. So Shem, that the Assyrians were white, the Persians were white, the ancient Persians, the Greeks, because the Greek men worked outdoors naked, but the Persians lived very luxuriously. They were wealthy, and the Spartans mocked them because they saw them as soft. That wealth makes soft men, which is actually true. Look at America. Right. So Xenophon in 405 BC, writing in his Anabasis, wrote that he marveled over how white the skin of the Persians was. He marveled at it, because they never took their clothes off in the sun. They always wore their clothes, even in battle. And I have artwork on my site demonstrating that, how white they were. And the ancient Near East, which I would count from all the way to the Indus River, from Anatolia. Anatolia is modern Turkey. It's not really white anymore because it's overrun by Muslims and Arabs. That entire world was overrun by Muslims and Arabs by like 1100, 1200 AD. So it hasn't been white in 1,000 years, but it was white for the 3,000 years before that, entire world. Egypt, the entire Near East, the Caucasus Mountains region, Black Sea, Anatolia, Caspian Sea, that there was a Greek empire in Sogdiana and Bactria, which was the other side of the Caspian Sea. And today it's one of the Turkmenistan or something like that. I forget, Kazakhstan. It's one of those Muslim enclaves, those Muslim, I don't really want to call them nations, but they're basically Arabs today. The world has changed drastically in the geopolitics of the last 2,000, 3,000 years, and we don't realize it. So we see brown people living there today, and we think, oh, they were always brown. No, they weren't always brown. Was New York always brown?
Right. That's
Was
true.
London always brown? So we fool ourselves because we don't understand classical history, but our enemies had purposely separated us from our history. I've spent great deals of time reading Greek and Latin classical history. It's the only way to get us in touch with our true roots. And once you see this, you can't unsee it.
Right.
And the race of Adam was not the only race of people here. First, we had those Nephilim, those fallen ones, that had mixed with the race of Adam and caused the flood. But Cain, when Cain was punished, he was given a mark because he was afraid that anybody that saw him would kill him. Who was he afraid of? If it was only Adam, Eve, and Cain, who was Cain afraid of? And he
Right.
went and found a wife and built a city. Who'd he build a city for? Why was it a city? Why not a house? Most guys would start by finding a wife and building a cottage. How about
Right.
that? No, he built a city. So we have people here that don't come from Adam, that were evidently here before Adam. And that's true. But that's not revealed until the New Testament. Because in Matthew chapter 13, it's written that Christ came to reveal secrets kept from the foundation of the world. So as soon as we read that line, we must understand that not everything about ancient history was given to Moses to record in Genesis, that something was being held back. And that's evident in Genesis. Because when we get to Genesis 10, we have this table of nations, and they're all the same race. They all came from Noah and his three sons. And Noah was preserved, as it says in Genesis chapter 6, because he was perfect in his race. That's why he was preserved in a world where everybody else was race mixing with the Nephilim. So Noah's family was preserved because he was perfect in his race. So we get to Genesis chapter 14. And there are people mentioned there called Zuzims. And they're definitely people, and they're seen as a different people, outsiders, from the biblical perspective. And the word Zuzim in Hebrew, as it's defined by Strong's, means roving creatures.
That sounds kind of creepy.
It sounds like Mexicans coming over the southern border to me, to be
Right.
honest.
Yeah.
They were people, but they were roving creatures. They didn't even have a proper name. Then there
Right.
was the Rephaims in Genesis chapter 14. And this is verse 5. Both of these groups are mentioned, along with the Enims. And the word Emim just means terror. They're terrors. They don't even have a proper name. So the Bible is identifying these people that we can presume are people, they're tribes of hominids, as roving people, roving creatures, and terrors. Are you kidding me? And they have no genealogy with Adam. They're outliers.
Right.
There's some other race that was here before Adam. That's the only viable deduction. So the Rephaim are also mentioned there, but the Rephaim are more identifiable. Rapha was one of the people called giants. Rephaim doesn't mean giants by itself, even if a lot of the Nephilim were great of stature, and they were. And Genesis chapter 6 explains that they were men of great stature and renown. So this word Rephaim actually comes from a word Rapha, which is a patronym. And he was one of the Nephilim, and his descendants are called Rephaim throughout the Bible. And there are others like him, the Anakim or the sons of Anak, and they are identified as Nephilim in Numbers chapter 13, verse 33, I believe. So
Well, I
where
have
did
a quick
these people
question.
come from?
I have a quick question. Would Is the Anunnaki like the more modern, you know, name or whatever? And I think they say, oh, it's from Sumeria. Are these the same kind of group that you're talking about now?
Well, you can make that association.
Okay. All right. I was just curious. Okay.
But Anunnaki, that's a mythological embellishment of the Sumerians, right?
Right.
Who
right.
imagined that these fallen angels were gods, and they called them the Anunnaki.
Right.
And they actually, like Inanna, the story of Gilgamesh, right? That the Gilgamesh needed a rival because he was too full of himself and abusing people. So they wanted to make him a rival, so they made a giant named Enkidu. And one of the Anunnaki came down and created Enkidu in the desert, right? In the grasslands of Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm.
And Enkidu got his butt kicked by Gilgamesh, right? So it didn't really work out for her. Gilgamesh actually corrupted him with a woman. And that's how he got power over him. And that's the story in the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's a 3,500-year-old epic, at least. No, I'm wrong. It's a 5,500-year-old epic. It goes back to the 4th millennium B.C.
Wow.
And it's known from inscriptions from 3 Mesopotamian cultures and languages, the Sumerians, the Akkadians, and the Babylonians. So the story was popular for years. And there's language in the story that helps explain, and I've cited this, that helps explain that Genesis chapter 3 is an allegory about sexual relations. And it is.
Okay.
So that being said, we get to Genesis chapter 15, and there's a table of nations there that are occupying the land of Canaan that's being promised to Abraham. And 5 of those nations are Canaanite nations. But the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kenites are the descendants of Cain. The Kenizzites and the Kadmonites and the Perizzites are not recognizable from any earlier scriptures, that they're people with no origins. They didn't come from the descendants of Noah. So that they are also outliers. They're mm-hmm. people of other races that didn't come from Adam. And then you have the Rephaim mentioned there as well. So that's 5 of the groups in the land of Canaan that came, that Abraham was promised to inherit their land. 5 of those groups did not come from Noah. There are other races that are related to the Nephilim.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more than one race on this planet as we see it, right? There's more than one race. And blacks in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, they don't have the same origin we do. Their origin is not explained to us because they're not part of the biblical narrative. They're not a subject of the biblical narrative. But if we go to Isaiah chapter 43, verse 3, I'm going to go there because I want to get it right. In Isaiah chapter 43, 3, God says that he gave up Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sheba for the children of Israel. And what does that mean? And I'll tell you what it means. At that point in history, Isaiah is writing those words right after 700 BC. And that's establishable from the archaeology of the historical events recorded in Isaiah. Okay? So about 50 years before Isaiah wrote those words, you could look up the 25th dynasty of Egypt. Nubians, blacks, invaded Egypt, and they invaded Cush and Sheba in the far south of Arabia. And they overran those nations, and they didn't really turn them black overnight, but they amalgamated themselves with them. They ruled over them for 75 years before another Egyptian pharaoh that was Egyptian had come to power. So they ruled over, these Nubians ruled over these nations for 75 years, and you could bet that a lot of them were in the process of turning black. And that's where Egypt got and Ethiopia became race mixed.
Okay.
So if Yahweh gave up, if God gave up these nations which came from Noah, if he gave them up, who did he give them up to? His friends?
Right.
They were giving up the sub-Saharan Africans. So that's the way we should look at these blacks. That's an example in scripture of how we should look at these blacks. Right now he's giving people of our modern white races up to the same blacks as our as punishment for our sins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what's going on today.
Yeah, it makes sense. That when I realized, because obviously I'm catching up on it. There's just so much out there. I can't possibly investigate it all at the same time. But when I learned about and saw and from the perspective that the Bible is a racial book about our history, then it all made sense. It all clicked, and it was like an aha moment as to why the modern Jews of today hate us so much with so much passion. Because I'm like, what is their problem? Like, they're just weird, psychopaths. But this makes sense. Like, they cannot deal with the fact. I mean, they have to have the demonic bloodline because, we know that the fallen angels, I call them demons, the fallen angels, hate God's creation so much that they seek to corrupt them all the time. That's all they think about. That's all they want to do. That's all they can do. And when I see this playing out in real time, in modern day, that's all they want to do. And they lie and they deceive. And I'm just like, wow, I struggle to articulate the words to describe how I'm feeling and how I think about it. It's just so foreign to me. And I suppose it's a good thing because I don't want to be able to understand something like that. I mean, I understand it, right, on a logical level, but like to make sense, I'm like, I couldn't imagine. That must be their hell because, in my opinion, I don't think they have souls. And I think that's one of the reasons which they're so afraid to die. And plus, they're gonna meet their judgment. So they're going to do anything in their power to avoid that, I suppose. It's just, so again, thank you and people like you who have stuck it out and didn't waver and you got the message out. And I think a lot of white people are hearing the call. I'm seeing more and more white men starting to say, yeah, I don't really care about your isms because they don't mean anything, and I'm very excited that white men are being more tribal and, snapping out of the propaganda manipulation. We are going to be going into break and we'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you really prepared? There's one critical piece most people forget. When disaster strikes, the most powerful survival tool isn't in your hands, it's in your head. But here's the hard truth. Knowledge disappears fast when the grid goes down. That's why we created the Preparedness Tablet. The first and only off-grid digital library designed specifically for survival situations. We've done the work for you. This rugged, portable tablet comes preloaded with a massive library of practical knowledge, food preservation and storage, emergency medical care, off-grid living and homesteading, security, defense, and more. It's indexed, searchable, organized, and powered by a free solar charger, so you'll never be without it. It also comes with a protective hard case, and you can upgrade it with supplemental survival files and EMP protection. Whether it's a power outage, social unrest, or a full-blown crisis, this tablet gives you instant access to skills that save lives. From treating wounds to growing food, even saving cherished family documents and photos, this preparedness tablet is your silent partner when things go sideways. You can't know it all, but you can carry it with you. Preloaded with survival knowledge, runs 100% off-grid, backup and store your own files, lightweight, portable, and solar-powered. Join thousands of Americans closing the last gap in the emergency prep. Visit our website now and get peace of mind in the palm of your hand. The preparedness tablet also makes a thoughtful and potentially life-saving gift. Invest in yourself, protect your family. Visit www.comcoms.link. That's www.comcoms.link. Be ready, be smart, be the one who plans ahead. We also offer custom portable radios that come pre-configured for your local area. Included with these versatile radios is free basic training to get you up to speed quickly on how to use your radio. Visit our website today and learn all about our unique products. Comcoms.link. comcoms.link.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Howdy, cousins. This is RBN host Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn, asking you to please support the Republic Broadcasting Network. Every day, RBN's mission is to use our collective voices to spread truth and relevant information, to gain a deeper understanding of the adversary, and to gain knowledge for survival against the gradual erosion of the Republic. But in order to sustain this incredible communications network, RBN needs your financial contributions. To donate, visit republicbroadcasting.org, call 1-800-724-2719, or mail your donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Just listen to what Wayne has to say.
Extendovite. I have been taking it for about 2 years, and I had really bad heart palpitations. And since I've been taking it, I don't have any major episodes at all anymore. 76 years old, and I still play competitive basketball. Well, of course, I've taken care of myself really good since I was 60, but Extendivite really helped the blood pressure, really helped the... I used to get really bad episodes of heart palpitations, just skipping beats and double beats. But also, I wanted to tell you that I really appreciate your broadcast. Really refreshing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
William Fink of Krista Gina? Gina? I'm sorry, I chopped that up again.
No, everybody does that. Everybody does that.
I just nuked that word. I'm sorry. I'll get it right, though, I promise. If you'd like to call in, call 512-248-8252. Yeah, we're having a wonderful conversation. I'm just loving what you're saying, and I think we left off of... We were discussing about how white people are now hearing the call and coming back to their roots. And right. I'm very excited about it.
The Bible is a racial book, and it's a racial book all the way to the end of the Revelation. It's a racial book. If you look at Christ and the parable of the wheat and tares, God planted the wheat at the beginning of the world, and the wheat is evidently the race of Adam, where the devil came and planted these tares, and the devil stands for the Nephilim, the fallen angels of Revelation chapter 12. And if you read Revelation chapter 12, the serpent, as he's always called, also called, it persecutes the woman and sends a flood after her with his mouth. That flood is a flood of people. It's happening now. It's been happening since the Islamic invasions of Europe. The Revelation chapter 20 is the camp of the saints. But first I'm going to go back to Matthew chapter 25 and the parable of the sheep and the goats, where the sheep and the goats are gathered and separated on sight as a shepherd separates his sheep from his goats. Now, a shepherd don't ask his goats, were you good today? Were you a sheep today? No, he's a goat. He goes to the left. A shepherd doesn't ask the sheep, were you bad today? Were you acting like a goat? No, the sheep goes to the right. All the sheep go in the kingdom of God, and all the goats go to the fire prepared for the devil and his angels. That same devil, those same Nephilim, That's the origin of the goats. It must be their origin because it's their destiny. And the parable of the wheat and the tares tells us that's their origin. These are parables of Christ. He wasn't just blowing smoke out of his behind. Right. He was giving us these racial parables for a reason. Now, people would argue with me and say, oh, but the goats were judged because they didn't do well. But if you actually read the text, the goats are judged and condemned not for how they treated other goats, but for how they treated the sheep. If you did not do any of these things for the least of these little ones, then you didn't do them for me. He's talking about the sheep. So the goats are judged and condemned because of how they treated the sheep. I don't care if you know a good goat. He's in our society using our resources, and that is taking away from the sheep.
Right. There selfishly, no too, on top of it.
Yes, there are no good goats. So you go to Revelation chapter 20, and there's a camp of the saints. And the camp of the saints has to be the Christian nations of the world, without a doubt. And if you read the entire Revelation, you would understand that. So Satan gathers all the nations from the four corners of the earth against the camp of the saints and surrounds it and overwhelms it. And all of a sudden, they're all destroyed. And that's exactly what is going on today. We are the camp of the saints. We are surrounded. And I could take probably, I'm guessing, right, 3 hours. It would take me 3 hours to sit here and start from 3200 BC, which is when I believe the flood had occurred. The flood was a local flood. It wasn't a worldwide flood. That's absolutely ridiculous. I have a million reasons that disprove that. But the flood was a local flood. It covered most of Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia is a geophysical basin where the waters persisted for a long time before it could get out of the rivers. So the local flood, after the local flood, the races of Mesopotamia that the sons of Noah had branched out in and began to emigrate north of the Black Sea and into Europe and all the way to Spain. And they were in Spain by 2500 BC. And there were other people in Europe before them because the Nephilim in Europe were before them. So, but the Nephilim aren't our ancestors. That these Japhethites and other people inhabited the southern coast of Europe for 1,000 years or probably 1,500 years before the Israelites started founding colonies in Europe. And okay, most Europeans descend from the Israelites of the Old Testament. And I could sit here and it would take me 3 hours to explain, maybe two, to explain that entire history in a way that I could give documentation and sources for things and prove my case. But I don't have that 2 hours tonight. I'm sorry. People are just going to have to take it for granted. But it's already done on my website in many different ways.
Right.
So it's already at Christogenia.
Now, with the Christogenia, right? So with the Scythians now, and I'm still learning, so I may be wrong. I'm not, you know, the Scythians, did they go up through the Caucasus Mountains, like over on the east, you know, if I'm looking at the map, it would be the eastern part of that area up and through.
That's old information from British Israel. It wasn't necessarily wrong, but it wasn't complete.
Okay.
The Scythians had, and the Israelites that became Scythians had been settled in the cities of the Medes, and they did migrate around the Black Sea, but some of them were settled in Persia and even east of Persia in Sogdiana and Bactria. And those people went over the Caspian Sea and eventually migrated west. They were called the Massagetae. And according to Jordanes, a 6th century Greek historian, the Goths and the Huns both came from the Massagetae. And he talked about how that's debated, but he was certain it was true. Now, it's not Jordanes, it's Procopius. And Procopius wrote, he was a general in the armies of Belisarius, who was one of the most famous generals of the Emperor Justinian. And he knew both Goths and Huns up close and personal. He was a secretary to Belisarius and traveled with his army. So he knew these people firsthand when he wrote about them. Mm-hmm. He wasn't just making things up, right?
Right.
So there are all sorts of historical connections I can make to these people in the classics and in Assyrian inscriptions demonstrating that they are the Israelites who were taken into captivity. But the children of Israel in Palestine, through Tyre, chiefly the city Tyre, were making colonies in as far west as Britain and Ireland. It's from like 1200 BC, 1300 BC.
Right, right. And is that why they say the Celts have unique DNA, do you think? I don't know if you've heard that. I've recently heard that, like, over the past year or so, that or is it the Scots? I can't remember. Either the Celts or the Scots or, you know, that general area, they have unique DNA that they can't connect. Have you heard about that?
I don't give DNA science a whole lot of credence.
Okay.
It's very, very tightly controlled by our enemies.
Sure, yeah. I don't blame you.
And it's purposely, and this is stated, and I did a segment on this about 6 weeks ago at Christigenia. I did 45 minutes on this. This is stated in U.S. government agencies' documents that they basically refuse to acknowledge the existence of race in DNA.
What?
They deny that racial distinctions exist in DNA.
Oh, that's insane. That's crazy.
And it's managed. If you do studies talking about race and DNA, you're getting defunded. I wrote about it.
Wow. They're just so evil. That's just terrible. Ugh. Awful.
The academic scientists are told that they're making mistakes talking about race and DNA. And that's government agency policy. So how could we get the truth out of DNA research?
Yeah, that's true. It is very true. Before I forget, I wanted to, when you were describing how the Scythians, part of them went over to Persia and then up, like a northwest type area. Is that where the Caucasoid mummies are in like Central Asia type? Do you know who?
Yeah,
do you know?
They're further east. That's basically very close to where Bactria and Sogdiana were.
Okay.
You're talking about the Tarim Basin.
Yes.
Not really mummies properly, but they are because the climate is so dry there, and they were put in caves that sheltered from the elements. They are very well preserved bodies.
Yes.
Deceased bodies. And they had red hair and tartans.
Right. Now, what do you think about the group? My brain's just frozen tonight, but there's that group, hidden group. I think it starts with an H, over in Japan, where they say, and they're very Caucasoid type looking.
We didn't all go west. A lot of us went east and
went east.
Trouble.
Yeah.
And they raced me. So to me, it's over for them.
Right. Okay. So, but you think that is, obviously the reasons, but do you think that was part of that's true, basically, is what I'm, you know, because I can't, it's hard to tease out what's real and what's not unless you're very familiar with the, okay.
But there were people from other white nations besides the Israelites who had moved up into the Eurasian steppes.
Okay.
Okay, and there's evidence that people from Mesopotamia had gone into the Eurasian steppes all the way back to 3000 BC.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that. Okay.
I'm speaking of, like, Andronovo culture and related cultures. So I don't remember. I don't really have all this in my head, but I've written about it 20 years ago, right?
Okay.
2000 BC, Andronovo's culture. 2000 BC to 1150 BC. It's in that area in mm-hmm. Central Asia, north of India. It's the same area that might be adjacent to or even include the Tarim Basin. It's right there on the border of Tibet. So.
Okay.
Those people, I mean, there were many other white ethnic groups in Mesopotamia and Persia and the Zagros Mountains for a long time. And who knows how many splintered off and traveled to Asia or traveled north.
Now, we are from the tribe of Japheth, correct?
No, whites are generally from the tribes of Israel.
Okay.
most white Europeans are generally from the tribes of Israel, but we're all mixed in with elements of Japheth and other Shemitic tribes, such as the Assyrians, are among us. We took them as slaves.
Okay.
And that's a matter of prophecy in Isaiah, that we would take captive those who took us captive.
Right.
That we would take them as slaves. It's not only in Isaiah, it's in Diodorus Siculus, a first century historian, first century BC historian, Diodorus Siculus. And I have the citations in a set of papers I wrote called German Origins, which are available at Christogenia. It's podcast now also.
Okay, great. Your website is just wonderful. I mean, it's just chock full of information. So, yeah, I got to do my my deep dive. What do they call it? Binge listen to podcasts and stuff like that. I like doing that. So, and I love this ancient history stuff, you know, and learning the history and the migrations, and, you know, it just captivates me, because I like, really enjoy the history and literature of our people. So, it's just great. So everybody please go there. I do have a question. And this is from Ralph, and he wanted to know what you think about Homer's poem, The Odyssey. His take on it is that it shows the sovereignty of the creator, Yahweh, of this realm we live. I plan to set out, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So, yeah, he wants to know what your perspective is on the Homer's poem on the Odyssey, in that he believes it's the sovereignty of the creator, Yahweh, you know, on Earth.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to dispute that if Ralph sees it that way. I'm sorry. I read early 97. I sat and read the whole Bible for the first time in my life. I was 36 years old or 35. No, 36 years old in 97. So I started realizing that I wanted to find out if this message was true, so I was going to spend the next 12 years in prison studying ancient history. I made that commitment then, and that's what I did, except that I also learned Koine Greek and translated the New Testament. So I was in prison, but I wasn't really a criminal, and I was actually a cop and ended up in prison. That's life. I was Derek Chauvin in 1996, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, I spent my time doing that when I found this message. I wanted to prove to myself that it was true, or if it was false, because I always considered myself a Christian, but I didn't really know why I should be. You know what
right.
I mean? It's because my parents were their parents and their parents and their parents, and you don't dishonor your parents. So, like so many people do today. So anyway, Homer's Iliad and Odyssey are the first. I studied which classics I should read, and they were about the first classics I read, but I really didn't care about any of the mythology. I really only wanted whatever historical nuggets I could get from them to start to put together the pieces. And it's they're very valuable for that, the Iliad and Odyssey, because you could see Homer's world. And he made a couple of wrong statements because of anachronisms. The Cimmerians were not in the north at the time of the Trojans. I'm sorry, they weren't. The Cimmerians didn't exist until the Cymri were taken. The Cymri was the name that the Assyrians called the Israelites, were taken into captivity. That's when the Cimmerians began to exist, around 743 BC. And I could prove that the Cymri were part of the Assyrian Empire until Assyria fell in 612 BC. So that being said, the Iliad and Odyssey are very valuable to me, but I'm sorry I can't answer Ralph's question because I did not read it from that sort of perspective.
Okay. I guess you did answer his question, because he just wanted to know, like, what your perspective on that was. And so I hope you're happy with it.
I was just gleaning historical information. The Odyssey is very important because it has Odysseus sailing to the islands of the sun in the west, and there were no Sicilians. There were no Italians.
Right.
There were no Frenchmen. There's nothing. There's mythological creatures, sirens, and things like that. He slept with a witch out there.
Really?
So, yeah.
So is that where all this Hellenistic type of, like, you know, weird creatures and stuff came from? Or, I mean, like, what? I know people use that as, like, you know, it's like a metaphor, but what's your
the oldest Greek literature, I should say, only goes to like the 7th century BC. Now, a lot of academic scholars date Homer to the 8th century, but they're full of it. I'm sorry, they're full of it. They don't know. 7th century BC, Homer and Hesiod. And the epic cycles are mostly epic poems about Troy and the war with the Trojans that predate Homer by practically 600 years.
Okay.
And Greece had a dark age for several hundred years until the time of Homer, where it was ruled by tyrants mostly. And I could discuss that briefly, but I don't know if it's worth it here. The Odyssey and the Iliad are important because and Strabo the geographer. Strabo was a noted geographer, wrote volumes of geography describing the world of his time, and he died in 25 AD. So he was writing around the time of the birth of Christ. And Strabo called Homer the beginning of geography, basically.
Right.
So Homer described the world of how he envisioned it in 1200 BC, and that's very valuable.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, people are creative in their descriptions, I suppose. And Northman on 88 Stream says, yeah, we knew about demons back then. Those monsters were real, weren't they?
Yes,
so for sure.
A lot of those Greek myths came from Mesopotamia.
Yeah, well, there you go. So, and some of the descriptions you were talking about that, yeah, they sound creepy as hell. Well, thank you so much, William, for coming on. I'd love to have you back on because there's so much more to talk about. So
that's fine. And I'm sorry it goes so quick, but after an hour,
it does, and it flies by, especially when you're having fun, right? So everybody stay tuned for Matt, who's coming up next, and we will be back next week, Saturday. We'll have William back on very soon, and thanks for joining me. Have a great weekend, and be safe.
Thank you. Praise Christ.
Thank you. Thank you.